HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 160, recorded live Thursday, April 30th, 2009. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Sun engineer Joshua Marinacci.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm in the Lion's Den down here in Eugene, Oregon. And Scott Belware, my friend, hooked me up with Josh Marinacci, who is a staff engineer on JavaFX. That's what I mean by the Lion's Den. A Sun employee and a Microsoft employee had lunch. I had the hummus. He had a hamburger. And the world did not end.
In fact, it was delicious.
It was lovely. It was pretty cool, actually. And there were actually a drum circle broke out, which was just beautiful here in Eugene.
Rare sunny day in Oregon.
Yeah. The Berkeley of the Northwest. So you work on JavaFX. Now, mm-hmm. I worked in Java 10 years ago at, 10 years ago, 1999, somewhere around there, at Nike. And I remember doing, I guess it was called AWT, mm-hmm. the Abstract Windowing Toolkit.
Yep.
It's kind of all coming back. You've been in Java for 15 years?
Yeah, pretty much since the early betas and first public betas in 95.
Uh-huh. And I think I went Microsoft kind of after that. The AWT was really early on. So this was like Netscape 4 days. And right. At that point, I think Java was really the only plugin of any significance that you would have in your browser. Mm-hmm. So then fast forward 10 years later, what is JavaFX and how does it relate to Java?
So JavaFX is... I'll start with the official marketing ease and then explain what that actually means.
Nobody wants that, but okay. Make it quick.
It's a platform for RIAs, rich internet applications, mm-hmm. for all the screens of your life. It sounds like marketing
blather. All the screens of your life?
I know.
And you guys give us hassle for...
I'm not terribly happy with it, but it is actually accurate. It is a rich internet application platform, meaning it's a set of tools, APIs, and a new language. Mm-hmm. That are for building rich internet apps, meaning programs that run inside your web browser mm-hmm. and on the desktop.
Okay. A new language. I heard that. I'm going to come back to that.
I don't really like the term RIA because, rich internet application. Who wants an application that isn't rich? Who wants a poor app?
Yeah.
And all apps have to do with the internet now. Even if it's purely for installation, all apps are coming from the internet or connected to the internet, doing something interesting with the internet. So really, it's just applications.
Right.
This is a platform for building applications. Now, this is all client-side. This is not stuff that you run on your server. This is what actually runs on your desktop computer or your cell phone.
So for the .NET developers that are listening to us, to put this into context, because I'm going to kind of put mm-hmm. things in a .NET context for those people who are .NET programmers, this isn't J2EE. There's no beans involved in this Java. This is your client-side story, I guess, is the way to put it.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. So you said it's a new language. Java is a language I'm familiar with, and Java and C# look a lot alike. Mm-hmm. And then JavaFX is a language too?
So JavaFX is the platform, and it has its own language called JavaFX Script.
JavaFX Script.
It's a language designed to be familiar to people who are pure programmers, Java and C# developers, and people who are what we sort of call the Web 2.0 hipsters, the people who know some JavaScript and maybe a little bit of PHP or Ruby, mm-hmm. but they do a lot of work in Dreamweaver, a lot of work in Flash, in Photoshop, Illustrator.
Okay.
People who are very visually oriented and know some scripting. We wanted something that would be familiar to them. At the same time, our focus is GUIs. So there are features in the language specifically for building user interfaces. Binding is built in. Time is an actual data type because it's important to animation. Animation is built in.
Oh, really? So you're saying that there are things in the language that are built in to solve the problems of
user interface building.
Of user interface building.
Right. You would never use this to make a backend application. It doesn't.
So you would never
threads.
Make a JavaFX thing that had no UI.
Right.
Okay.
Its whole purpose is user interfaces.
Okay.
All of that said, it is built on top of the Java platform. At the end of the day, all this stuff compiles down to Java bytecode. It's in a jar file, and it runs.
A jar file is like a zip file or a cab or what we would call a zap. It's a zip file with a different extension.
Right.
Okay.
And it runs on the Java Virtual Machine, the JVM.
Okay.
So you don't actually need a new plugin for your web browser. It uses the regular Java applet plugin. And on the desktop, it uses Java Web Start, which is similar to Adobe Air, and I think Microsoft has the...
Click once.
Click once, yeah.
Okay, so Java Web Start is the thing that makes it jump out of the browser.
Yes.
Okay. JavaFX is the platform, and JavaFX script...
Is the language.
Is the language.
Right.
Okay, but it's not JavaScript. It has no relation to JavaScript
in any way. It has no relation to JavaScript other than it should be familiar to people who program in JavaScript.
Okay.
They should be able to pick it up pretty easily.
So if it's familiar, that probably means it uses curly braces.
It uses a lot of curly braces, yes.
Ah. Now, we have a language in Silverlight called XAML that uses a lot of angle brackets. Mm-hmm. Are your curly braces like our angle brackets?
In many ways. We use a lot of curly braces in the declarative parts of your code. So you can create, much like you would in XML or HTML, a tree-like structure describing your user interface, and then you start attaching event handlers and data to that visual structure.
So for scoping and for parenting, for describing that this is a parent of that, for making hierarchies?
Yes.
Okay. And who are the players here? We've got this Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess it's Flex. What's Flash? Flash Flex?
So Flex is basically, it uses ActionScript, which is related to JavaScript. It's essentially a way for programmers to code things that compile down to Flash files.
Okay.
So you can make a user interface that talks to the network and becomes a Flash file that will play in the Flash player
okay.
in your browser.
So Flash has a kind of a virtual machine of sorts,
mm-hmm.
a language and a UI thing. So they have a VM in a box. It's
right.
Flash.
It's their runtime.
Air is the thing that they have that jumps out of the browser.
Right.
Then we have Silverlight, which mm-hmm. has .NET, the CLR, and then Silverlight 3 can jump out of the browser.
Right.
And then JavaFX can live in the browser as an applet or
mm-hmm.
a square active area, and it can also jump out.
Yes.
As well. So that is, have I missed anybody?
No, those are the big three.
It's the big three.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I have missed somebody. JavaScript itself.
True.
Which may arguably be our greatest competition. We should be friends, and we should crush JavaScript.
We should. It's going to be hard, though. There's more people who use JavaScript than any other language.
And of all when you install a browser, I mean, that's the thing you have. It comes out of the box. You have
mm-hmm.
JavaScript, which is getting faster, and HTML5 will let you watch movies in a movie. What is it called? Is it media? Forget the name of the tag.
Video tag.
So then there's four of us.
Yeah.
It sounds like Google owns JavaScript.
In many ways. I don't know if they completely own it, but they...
No one owns JavaScript, but if you could say, well, what's Google's? It's probably JavaScript.
Absolutely, it is. They are driving a lot of the development in next-generation JavaScript technology. They're making their own web browser.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it's bigger than making their own web browser because they're making a declaration that they don't use Silverlight, they don't use Flash, and they don't use Java.
Right.
So they've made their decision about what their runtime is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Silverlight, we have this thing called a JavaScript bridge, which means that Silverlight can reach out into the
right.
DOM and kind of diddle with it, and vice versa. Can you do similar things in
yes.
Java?
In fact, So Java was the original plugin.
Mm-hmm.
It was the very first plugin that would let you make programs that ran in the browser.
Right.
And that was a big story up until about 97, 98.
Yeah.
And then Java on the client started to fade away.
Mm-hmm.
And Java on the server became the thing that most Java developers work with.
Right.
A lot of that has to do, is partly because of the UI toolkit, but a lot of it had to do with the actual applet plugin. It's horrible. It was built on Netscape 2 era APIs. It never worked the same in different browsers. It could crash your browser or lock it up.
So it wasn't Java's, the language's fault, as it was that this plugin lived too long.
It lived way too long. So a guy at Sun, who actually works on the Joggle project, which is OpenGL binding.
The Joggle?
The Java OpenGL binding. Okay. So it's.
I love that. I think it's great. I'm sorry, I have to interrupt because I think it's great that when I feel bad about our names, I realize that everybody, not just Sun or, you know, right. Everybody has these crazy. Yep. Why did we call it, you know, I don't know, Azure is our cloud. Joggle.
Yep.
You win on that one. That's awesome.
It's classic engineering marketing.
No, but it's a great name, though. I love it.
So Joggle, you know, OpenGL bindings, he really cared about making 3D games and visualizations.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And he wants to share that with the world, so it needs to go in a web browser.
Right.
And this is when he discovered just how truly bad our applet plugin was.
Ah.
And he joined the deployment team to rewrite the applet plugin. And he did it. He completely rewrote it from scratch, threw away all of the old code. Java Web Start, which is an XML file that downloads a bunch of resources and runs it.
Okay.
And applets, which were HTML that downloads a bunch of resources and runs it.
Right.
They used to be two entirely separate things. Even though they were using, they were doing basically the same thing.
Right.
So he combined the two together, completely rewrote it from scratch using modern browser APIs. It does require a recent browser. You have to have IE7 or Firefox 3 or higher.
Because we're talking about the, I think it's the NS API
yes.
plugin. I mean, this is, if you're going to write a plugin, there's a number of ways you can do it, and they're not all ActiveX. There's this notion of the Netscape APIs that are historical.
Right.
And then this NS API, there are some weird things about, you know, where each browser runs it, what threads are involved. If one of the things that people complain about is that, you know, IE crashes a lot. Well, it might not be IE. It's, in fact, plugins that are ill-behaved.
Right.
So even the best plugin developer still has to be aware that I'm running on Opera or I'm running on IE and do some little kind of things to make it work well.
Right. And so the old applet plugin had just been writing that line for way too long.
Okay.
So the new one, completely rewritten, unifies everything, uses modern APIs, and it'll actually run Java itself in a separate process. So you can actually -9 the Java process for your applet. It won't take down the browser.
Now, is this regardless of the browser?
If we're using the new plugin, meaning an IE7 or Firefox 3, yeah.
Huh, that's interesting. Now, I wonder if you're using IE8 or Chrome, which runs plugins in a separate process, if it'll run another process on top of that?
I'm not sure. I know it works in Chrome, but there might be an extra...
You could have bounce, bounce, bounce.
Right. Well, essentially, the plugin has a very slim JVM, which monitors all of the others.
I see.
And so it's kind of a little manager, which lets us do things like if you have an applet that really needs a bunch more memory, you need to set some JVM arguments. Okay. It can do that. Force it to be in its own JVM.
So you could have a page that had a half dozen Java applets.
Yes.
And they'll all have their own process?
If you choose.
By
default, it will try to share them.
Oh, so you can give your host a hint?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And it will try to do the right thing.
Okay.
And our goal was to make sure that it was impossible for Java to ever crash your browser. As a side benefit, it loads up faster, and we can do some interesting tricks, like if you write your applet in a certain way, and this is true for Java applets and JavaFX applets, you can literally drag the running program out of your web browser, and it still continues to run. Navigate away or close your web browser, the app is still running. Then when you close it, it asks you if you want to create a shortcut on your desktop.
Oh, that's cool. Now, this is a new thing?
Yeah, this we showed probably if you have – it came out in Java 6 Update 10. Which was released in October, I think.
Okay. So let me ask you this. I don't get the naming. Now, I know we kind of have some funny names, too.
Sure.
At least Silverlight's only on 3. Although I told the Silverlight guys to just call it Silverlight 11. So then we would just skip over Flash completely.
Excellent.
And just Silverlight 11 and then call it 13. Just pick random numbers that are like, maybe go primes. Just go and say 3, 5, 7.
And have that go over.
And I didn't like that idea. But at least they're not calling it like, you know, Silverlight 3.5 Service Pack 2, yeah, CTP. But you guys, I remember there was Java 3, or what was it in 99? What was I programming in 99?
Well, there was Java 1, Java 1.1, and then we jumped to Java 2.
Okay, that was the moment.
That was confusing.
Okay. Now,
because
right there,
the version number was still Java 1.2. We called it Java 2.
I remember those days. Okay, I was on Java 1.1.
Right.
And then RMI. I was running Java 1.1, like RMI edition, which was like a daily build of 1.1. Mm-hmm. And then 2 happened, which was 1.2, included RMI, and then I left.
Right.
So fast forward 10 years, we're on Java 6?
Yes. Java 7 is still currently under development.
Okay.
Now, one of the rules of the Java community process, when you say Java, you're really talking about a specification. It's the language and the APIs.
Okay.
Then we have our implementation of it, which is what most people think of when they download Java from Sun. But there are other implementations.
Do you know how to make the possible out of the impossible? Well, the .NET ninjas at Telerik do. They just released a huge pack of web controls all built on top of ASP.NET Ajax that'll help you build impossibly fast and interactive applications in no time at all. They've made the impossible possible in desktop development. If you think you can't have a carousel component in WinForms, well, you can. Their Windows Forms suite features a super powerful grid view control and 32 other crazy desktop components that'll give you dazzling WPF-like features, but in WinForms. They do the same thing in reporting solutions with a new design surface like nothing else. Looks just like graph paper, gives you advanced page layout capabilities, makes it feel more like a graphic design software than a reporting solution. Go check them out at Telerik.com and be a .NET ninja. And thanks for listening.
Okay, so to put this in the context of the Microsoft person that may be listening, we have this thing called the CLI, the Common Language Implementation, I think is what it's called. And it's like our definition of what a CLR implementation should look like.
Yes.
Which is different from the instance.
Right.
But these things merge a lot.
Right.
Like we have this Mono, which is an instance of the CLI.
Which is an open source implementation.
Yeah.
Of it,
right? Okay, so when I say Java, I'm thinking like the version I just installed.
Right.
But there's a spec.
This kind of abstract spec, and one of the rules is that we can't change any public API between major versions. So Java 6 actually came out end of 2000. Let's see, when did I join? So end of 2006, I believe. Okay. Java 6 came out. Java 7 will come out next spring, probably.
Okay.
So that's a 4-year gap. In the meantime, we've done many update releases, which actually provide a lot of crucial functionality, but we haven't added any new APIs.
Okay, so you're only allowed to add an API
in a major
version. In a major release.
And it has to go through all of this approval
the
and
community
be reviewed
level.
And all this stuff. Most of what we wanted to fix actually didn't require new APIs. It was purely implementation improvements. And so that's what all of the updates have been.
Okay, so we're on update 13? 10. Update 10.
10. Well, no, 10 came out October. I think the last public is update 12 or 13, and 14 will be coming out soon.
I've always felt that both of us, I mean, me speaking for Microsoft and you speaking for Sun, should developers should have one version number and my mom should have another.
Right.
You know?
So for most people, it's Java 6.
Oh,
okay, realistically, for most people, it's Java or that cup thing. They don't even really understand.
But like, I installed Ubuntu yesterday, mm-hmm. and I got the 64-bit version, which I thought was a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't a good idea. Because then I wanted to get Java working, but I needed Java 6 update 14 preview or something like that.
Right, because 14 won't come out for another month or two.
Right. But we're on 10 now.
Well, 12 came out in December.
Yeah, so you have trouble keeping this stuff straight as much as I do. So I don't feel bad. This is good. Because all of our companies screw this stuff up. So 14, I didn't understand that was just like, it's like Java 6.14.
Essentially, yeah.
Is what it was.
We now call it update something, but you can think of it as
6.14. Okay, so what's the difference between 10 and 14? Like we release these things called, I think we call them GDRs, general distribution releases,
mm-hmm.
for Silverlight. So like every couple of months, your Silverlight implementation will just magically get updated.
Right.
Just like Flash does the same thing.
Yeah, we do the same.
We don't tell you if it's something that's minor. We're just fixing some bugs.
Right. And everything we've done is bug fixes. Now, what we typically do is alternate releases where if you go to request a download, you get the most recent version.
Right.
And then there's the version that we turn on in the auto update.
Uh-huh.
Auto update is usually a point release behind. That way we've had a chance to test it even more. So lots of developers have tested it, but we haven't actually pushed it out to the entire world yet.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, so then I might have downloaded 10, because that's the one that's on the website.
Right.
But people have been auto-updating to 9 to see if 10 has problems?
I think 10 is now an auto-update. Probably 12 is what you could download directly.
I see. Okay. That's cool. So it's kind of a way of keeping things conservative.
Yes.
But you're not adding major functionality
right.
until Java 7.
Until Java 7. Java 7 will have actual new APIs and lots of other
Now, which one stuff. Do I need to run JavaFX? 6?
Actually, 6 updates 7 or above.
Okay. So that's your baseline.
That's our baseline. I highly recommend 6.10 or above
mm-hmm.
just because that's where you get the new applet plugin. And the experience of running applets in a web browser is so much better.
Really?
It's not even worth
So like the old, I bump into applets when I'm looking at my nanny cam. My kid has a camera and it has a Java applet.
Right.
So sometimes in the old days when I would hit a Java applet, I knew I was about to hit it because the browser would freeze.
Right.
That would be before Joggle guy fixed it.
Yeah.
Right.
Before Ken did the magic and made it work.
So then if you have a Java applet that you come into contact with, you want to update.
Absolutely.
And then that'll make that application, even old applets work still.
Yeah. It runs all the old, we take backwards compatibility very seriously, which is why it actually took so long. It took over a year to completely rewrite the plugin, which mm-hmm. you'd think would be a small thing, but compatibility is so important.
So JavaFX lets me write UIs. I assume it lets me do video and the kind of things like that?
Yes. So in addition to the language, we have a new runtime with new APIs.
Okay.
So the new APIs have a scene graph rather than drawing lines.
A scene graph, S-C-E-N-E.
Yes.
Okay.
So rather than say, the old Java way of doing things is you give in a graphics context and you say draw line,
right.
set color, draw this other line, set
yeah.
color,
like
draw
Windows
shape.
3.1,
exactly.
The good old days.
Now you say, here's a rectangle, here's where it should be on the screen. I don't care how it gets painted. If the screen needs to be refreshed, I don't want to be called back every time it has to be repainted. Here's an object representing
right.
a rectangle, make it happen. If I move the rectangle mm-hmm. by changing its X value, then the screen should get updated again, and I don't care how it happens. That's what a scene graph gives us.
Okay. So that's interesting, because that's a similar philosophy moving from, like, on the client, from what we call WinForms
mm-hmm.
to WPF.
Right.
Or from, or moving into Silverlight, because XAML says, here's an object.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no notion of, like, the WM paint event. Now, there is, like, deep
sure,
down.
But you don't have to deal with it.
Now, do you think that you, and when I say you and I mean you represent all employees of Sun. And of course. And I represent, but don't speak for, all employees of Microsoft. Do you think that we are like in this massive thumb war from a computer science perspective? Or is this like we came up with this idea first and you came up with that? Or is this just the only direction it could have gone?
So it's interesting.
You know what I'm saying?
It's interesting you brought this up. I actually gave a presentation to some University of Oregon students here about graphics mm-hmm. history, like development of APIs, because they just started learning about scene graphs, so they wanted me to kind of give a retrospective. And I sat down and did some research. You know, read through all my old graphics books. I really think this is just the logical way it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
When you work at a higher level, you do take a performance hit,
right.
but it makes you so much more productive, and that eventually the tools and implementation get to be so good that it can actually do a better job than if I were to implement it myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing that happened with compilers. I don't write in assembly because I can write in C, and the compiler's actually good enough that in 99% of the cases they'll do a better job than if I was to write in assembly. Plus, I can write 10 times more code in the same amount of time. Then we moved up another level to languages like Java and C#, where
right.
we don't have to manage objects, manage the memory anymore.
Mm-hmm.
All of that's handled for us, and 99% of the time, the automated systems do a better job because now we've had 10, 15 years of improvement. I think scene graphs are the same thing. Even JavaScript is basically, the scene graph is the DOM, is this big tree structure, and
right.
you make a change, and then the browser figures out how to redraw it on screen.
Yeah, because like you would bump into problems when you would do something in graphics, and then you'd go and you'd learn how double buffering worked.
Right.
And then you think to yourself, gosh, I'm writing a checkbook application.
Why do I have to know
about
double buffering?
Why do I care about double buffering? And the same thing happens in 3D now, where it's like, you know, just let the remember the, what's it called, the Voodoo graphics card?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
tons of low-level custom coding to squeak out every bit of performance.
Yeah, and now it's just like you'd write to DirectX or OpenGL, and it just works itself out.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I expect, because I don't know as much about DirectX, but OpenGL is very much a draw level, like, you know, here, draw line, draw polygon.
Right, Vertex isn't, just handle it.
Yeah. And more people are programming to things built on top of OpenGL, where it's a 3D scene graph, basically.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it, because they are doing that. They're saying, here's an actor.
Yep.
And that actor is moving over here. And then they'll say, well, here's from a physics engine, right?
Yep.
Here's who's doing my ragdoll physics. Mm-hmm. Now, do you guys talk to the hardware, too? We just Silverlight 3 has 3D accelerated hardware.
Yes, so we just started adding hardware acceleration. Mm-hmm. We will use OpenGL and DirectRAW3D when available.
Hmm.
But we have software fallbacks for everything.
Right.
We also have pixel-level effects, which under the hood turn into pixel shaders. So like blur and drop shadow, hue, rescale, that kind of stuff.
It's amazing that we are even talking about like a browser plugin that cares about pixel shaders. I'm not even 100% sure what a pixel shader is. I mean, it's either one color or it's not.
Well, from a technical perspective, they're interesting for lots of sorts of reasons. But from an application developer point of view, it just means you're making your user's graphics card do all the heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
The more you can shove up to the graphics card, the better.
Right.
Because the graphics card is optimized for pushing out pixels really fast. So I could do a blur operation in software, or mm-hmm. I could do it in the GPU, and the GPU will be 10 times faster.
It's kind of sad, because I feel bad for all those Java applet developer guys from like 10 years ago that would take... remember, they'd have the... here's a picture, and then right below it would be the water...
The rippling lake effect.
And it's like, oh, dude, he wrote... That's amazing. I've never seen anything like that. And now it's like an attribute on
like
an
one
object.
Line.
Just make it ripple.
Yep.
Well, like, and like Apple has made an entire business out of the upside down, blurry, shiny desk.
Yeah, it's this century's drop shadow, I think. Or the no, remember they used to put page curls on everything.
Oh yeah, I actually was looking at a magazine that someone sent me a link to a magazine. I think it was in Flash, and it was like one of these Zinio type things where you can read the magazine in Flash.
Oh right, right.
It had no hotkeys. And you had to not only just grab... I thought you just click the page curl. Every single page turn required you grabbing the page curl...
Oh, that's awful.
...and dragging it across the full length of a 1200, you know, 1280
wide page. That's progress.
And I was like, okay, well, the first time, that was so fun. But when I was on, like, page 80, I'm no longer interested in turning the page. I don't care how interesting your magazine is. It was almost like the guy was just really so excited about his page curl effect.
Yep. He had to find a way to use it.
So I don't see a lot of Java effects when I'm kind of bumping around the net.
That's just because it's very new.
Okay.
JavaFX 1.0, which was still pretty limited, shipped in December.
Oh, so it is new. Wow, this is like a couple months old new.
Yeah.
It seemed like, but JavaFX is not Java Web Start.
Java Web Start has been part of Core Java since 2003, 2004.
Okay, because see, that's a long time ago. And I was thinking that this was a five-year-old thing.
Well, JavaFX, we announced it in 07. We had something real to show on stage in 08.
Okay.
The preview was last summer, and the 1.0 was December.
Mm-hmm.
Then we did a 1.1 release, which was really the mobile-targeted thing, which is the other major feature of JavaFX. The language for GUIs, really good runtime that does stuff for you.
Right.
The other major feature is that the exact same code can run on Java ME cell phones. Java-enabled phones.
Okay, so this is when you get back to what we were teasing each other about.
Screens of your life.
All the screens of your life. The television screen.
Yes.
The...
And there will eventually be JavaFX for TV. And I think we're going to show stuff at Java 1.
Really? That. Java VM in my television set.
Or something attached to your television
set.
I don't know the details. Huh. But it has always been part of our plan that traditionally Java ME, Java for cell phones,
mm-hmm.
and Java SE, which standard edition, Java for desktops.
Okay.
While they both use the Java language, the APIs have been very different. And if you were a Java desktop developer, you had to learn lots of new things to be a mobile developer and vice versa.
I see.
JavaFX gets rid of that. It is one platform. There is no JavaFX mobile. There's
right.
just JavaFX.
Oh, okay.
And we have demos where it's like a little Yahoo search application. I can run it in a web browser from within NetBeans, our IDE.
Right.
I can flip a switch and say target mobile.
Okay.
Run. It will pop up in the mobile emulator. The exact same program. No code changes whatsoever.
And did the person really only had to be aware of the screen thing, the size of the screen, right?
If you write, we have things called profiles. Most APIs are in the common profile. If you stick with the common profile, it will literally work everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to care about is screen resizing.
Right. Yeah. I had a, a demo I gave at our conference called PDC, Professional Developers Conference, mm-hmm. where I took a Silverlight 2 application and put it on Silverlight 2 for mobile.
Oh, right, right.
Same kind of thing. But the screen size, I mean, it was like the difference between 1280
right, right.
versus, I don't know, I think it was like 320 by 240.
The cell phone screens are starting to get pretty high res. I have a demo phone from, well, it's not a demo, it's a Sony Xperia, I think, X1.
Really?
It has an 800 by 400 pixel screen.
You know, someone was talking that there's word of an iPad.
Could be.
Which would be like...
Be like a large iPod Touch.
Or a small Newton.
The E-Mate.
Exactly. It's a message pad 2000. Because it's like... And suddenly I just had this whole kind of Jean-Luc Picard thing where I would be right. walking around my kitchen with this similarly sized as an iPhone as far as thickness.
Sure.
But maybe like 9 inches. I guess I would... I don't know. It'd be like not a netbook. You know how Apple's been so...
They've been bashing on the netbooks.
Oh, yeah, netbooks, lousy experience. You know they're going to release a netbook.
Of course.
But they're not going to call it a netbook.
No.
They're going to call it the iPad or whatever. Because it's just going to be the screen part of the netbook.
Right.
And that makes them like, you know, like, hey, we're awesome. Look, no keyboard. But like, I mean, we're sitting here and I'm using my my Dell Mini 9.
Yeah.
I'm covering one eye and then I'm using my hand to cover the keyboard. I was like, okay, I could see that being useful if I could carry on a tablet.
Sure.
Which as a Microsoft guy, and I've only been a Microsoft guy for a year, but you know, I have to rah-rah for the company sometimes. It's like, man, tablet PCs were a good idea, except they were 7 pounds.
Right.
And they folded, you know, they folded backwards.
Yeah, and a flash hard drive was $5,000.
Exactly. Now someone else will do it, though, and we won't get the credit.
Yeah.
Well, I'm bitter. Not really. So Java developers do their work in Eclipse or Java? What do you guys
use? There's a bunch of Java IDs. The main two are Eclipse and NetBeans, which is the one that Sun makes. They're both open source.
Oh, NetBeans.
Yes.
That's okay. That's the that's not Java Beans, which is a different thing.
Java Beans is just a spec for objects that you can query.
Okay. You tell me, I apologize. It's been a long time.
Sure. NetBeans... Well, NetBeans was originally built on Java Beans, which is why they have beans in the name, because it's not a logical thing to have in the name of your IDE.
Yeah, yeah.
So NetBeans is our IDE. We ship. JavaFX comes with a plugin for NetBeans that does code completion and has a very nice preview mode where you can actually see the graphics that you're composing on screen every time you change a letter. It will recompile.
So it's kind of like split screen. You have your JavaFX code, and then you've got your preview.
Right. And so you can say... You know, what I love about JavaFX is it makes coding really fun. You know, there are things that I wouldn't have done in Swing because it would just take too long and I'd get bored.
So what's Swing?
JavaFX. So Swing was the old user interface toolkit.
Okay, so I used the AWT.
Right.
Which had like buttons and stack panels and grid flow things.
Swing was a more advanced version of that, but it was still built for the desktop of like Windows 95.
Swing was the one where it had themes, but
yes.
None of them looked like the OS you were running.
Right, and they were all horribly ugly because they were done by...
Yeah, here's the purple theme and the green theme. Yeah, okay. So then, so Swing, AWT actually looked pretty good. It was hard to write, but it looked...
AWT actually used native controls.
Right, it looked like a Mac or it looked like a PC.
Right, but that also caused problems because your code would behave differently on different platforms.
And we had that problem at Nike. We had to go and say, if on Mac, do this.
Right, so Swing was created to solve that.
They call it owner draw.
Everywhere. Right.
Okay, so they weren't real buttons. They were a picture of a button.
Yes, it was all done in pure Java code.
Okay.
And it worked reasonably well, but there are limitations to Swing. I wrote a book called Swing Hacks, which was 500 pages of pushing Swing to its limits. I know how far it can go.
Mm-hmm.
And it was built for the era of Windows 95. It was built for the era of most things aren't shaped. We don't have very much translucency. Certainly don't have shaped windows.
Right.
It's not common that you're going to have your user interface controls actually slide across the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So doing those things are very difficult. Lots of custom code or simply impossible because the underlying platform can't support it.
Right.
Now it's the 21st century. We have compositing window managers. We have shaped windows. We have fast graphics cards. We can have gradients. We can move things across space and time. But the UI toolkit just wasn't up for it.
Right. Okay.
So that's where JavaFX comes in. This is our chance to reinvent desktop Java, client-side Java, learning the lessons of the last 15 years, but taking advantage of modern technology.
So putting this into the context of the vocabulary, rather, of the .NET guy. So like WinForms, you kind of like, you know, native controls, a button's a button. And then WPF is our kind of reinvention of desktop.
Yes, exactly.
Windows.
Using modern technology.
And it can still look like a normal application. I mean, sometimes when people demo these kinds of things, they go completely over the top.
Right.
Right.
But all the page curls on it.
Yeah. Here's a line of business application with a page curl of its own. Flip it over, transparent, green buttons.
Right.
You can probably do those things in JavaFX too.
Right. You can.
But or you can be more kind of buttoned down.
Right.
And look like an actual line of business application, for example.
Exactly. And take advantage of greater speed, the fact that it runs the same everywhere, all of the implementation fixes we put in. And because JavaFX, like I said, was built for GUIs, binding the language means you can do things like I have a business object which represents like a person. You know, it has a name field on it and a address field. I can create a GUI and literally bind the two together in code where I just say, you know, address field.text equals bind person object dot name. And then the underlying system makes that happen with some graph.
See, that's so crazy because we have a similar thing. We have binding in XAML. Do you look at our stuff?
I started to look at it because I met some of the Silverlight evangelists at AuraDev last year in Sweden.
Yeah.
And there are some differences between our platforms, but there's a lot of similarities. I think because we're all trying to solve the same problems.
Yeah. Does it make you wonder if our bosses, like the people who come up with this stuff, are like in like, I don't know, talking to each other? Or I asked a little bit about this question earlier, but I mean, could it really be just that this is the only direction that our simple minds can go and then we're all going there at the same time? Because I suspect if we had a Flash guy on the show, that they would, the same thing's happening.
Yeah, Flex does a lot of the same things. It's because we're trying to solve the same problem.
Yeah, and this is the only way, though? I mean, just because we all have the same problem doesn't mean that we would all come up with the same similar data binding.
We have our own little twists on it. I'm sure our binding is different than yours. Mm-hmm. We use CSS for skinning. We have some plugins for Photoshop and Illustrator that are different than the expression design suite.
Yeah.
But if you take a look at it from a high level, strip off all the brand names
and the
technology details, we're trying to solve the same problem.
Yeah, like from an anthropological perspective.
Yeah.
Looking back 20 years and they look at this, are they going to say, yeah, well, you know, humans were heading in this direction as opposed to these four or three, I don't know. I'm wondering more and more if we need to be more worried about JavaScript and HTML5 than fighting amongst ourselves.
That's where Google's putting a lot of money.
I wonder if of the four of us, of Adobe, Microsoft, Sun, and Google, if it's who's the most evil? Right? We all know what the knee-jerk reaction is.
Right.
I'm starting to wonder if that's not the case.
I don't know.
I got to get a Google guy on the show and ask him what the master plan is over
ask
there.
Ask him about GWT.
Yeah.
GWT lets you write Java code on your server that essentially is compiled into JavaScript, where they're literally using JavaScript purely as their virtual machine.
Someone's hear that?
Yep, we're in Eugene.
We're in Eugene. Someone is smoking and it's being picked up, and they've burned something down. GWT is Google Windowing Toolkit?
Google Web Toolkit.
Web Toolkit, my bad.
Essentially, you write Java code, which is compiled on your server.
Right.
And then it actually produces these gigantic blobs of JavaScript that you would never.
So JavaScript would be your bytecode, my IL.
Yes. They are essentially using JavaScript as bytecode.
Interesting.
And that's why it's in their interest for JavaScript interpreters to be faster.
You know, one of the things that never. One little company that never really got its thing, it never really happened, was called Open Laszlo.
Oh, yeah.
Remember those guys?
Direct web.
So Open Laszlo had this thing where you would write in angle brackets in XML the description of a window, and you'd do it in the Open Laszlo language. And it would compile to either JavaScript, DHTML, or Flash. And they were always talking about maybe doing it into Silverlight, but I think they faded away. I don't know what the status of them is. But it was a similar kind of an idea where, like, let's make a language that is totally implementation non-specific.
Right.
And then we'll use everyone else's runtime. Mm-hmm. So as long as everyone's locked into us, they can push us, meaning Open Laszlo.
Right.
Then we can push a button and they can choose who they want to be locked into.
Right.
Or JavaScript, which may or may not be the illusion of being not locked into anyone, I guess.
Sort of. It may not be controlled, but it's definitely being driven by a very small number of people.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't know which way, direction it's going to go. It'll be fun to listen to this in 5 years and see.
Yeah. It'll be enlightening.
Cool. Well, Josh, thanks a lot for sitting down with me today. I really appreciate you taking the
thanks
time.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.